Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm in love with the shape of you. We push and pull like a magnet do. Although my heart is falling too. I'm in love with your body.
Wait, that's not the Brian Lehrer Show theme. That's Ed Sheeran's I'm in Love with the Shape of You, and you know that that is the number one most streamed song of the decade, according to Spotify. Drake's One Dance came in second. Coming in third was Post Malone's Rockstar. So listeners, what music did you listen to most in the last decade? What were your favorites? What did you discover? What are you ready to leave behind and think, I really listened to that 1,200 times in 2013? Musically speaking, what were the 2010s all about? And how about how you get your music? How did that change for you? We're going to take phone calls, 212-433-WNYC. As joining me now in the green space to talk about the music of the 2010s, what changed and what might be coming next, is none other than John Schaefer, WNYC host of New Sounds and Soundcheck.
Hi, Brian.
You're familiar with the green space stage, I take it.
Yes, yes.
And I'm so glad you're with the station still after 38 years and going strong. So when you think of the last decade in music, what's the first thing that comes to your mind?
Well, the first thing is not music itself, but how we get it. I mean, here's what happened. In the aughts, the big thing in the music industry was, how do you compete with free? Because, you know, downloading was available, and it was pretty easy to illegally and freely download music. So the industry was in a crisis. In 2012, Spotify began here in the United States. And that really changed everything. And that's when the industry realized, oh, that's how you compete with free. You use everything. You know, it's one thing to be able to freely get the music that you know you like. It's another thing to be able to pay a monthly fee and just have everything, everything at your disposal. Mm-hmm. Whatever's coming, whatever's been, you know. So, or even to have it for free and then endure the ads. So, you know, the same model that TV, that free TV has used all these years. So now, you know, what we saw in the teens was really the industry, which had been a sinking ship, kind of righting itself a little bit. And so streaming is by far the number one way that most Americans and most people in the world consume music.
So Spotify comes in 2012. Let's hear a clip from one of the first huge Spotify hits. This is Radioactive by Imagine Dragons. A song you couldn't avoid, even if you wanted to.
I never understood that video either, but the Green Space audience here got a chance to see a little bit.
What about the video for people who couldn't see it?
Just these kind of puppets battling each other. You know, what does that have to do with imagining dragons or being radioactive? I have no idea. But it was really the signal of streaming as the new normal in the music industry, because it was the first real streaming hit.
Did you do your Spotify decade wrap-up? For people who don't know, maybe you could explain this.
Yeah.
Spotify is sending its users the list of the most listened to songs on Spotify by that individual.
Right. So to answer your question, I did not do that because I use Spotify in a different way for most people. I use it to check things out. So yeah. I have millions of things that I've listened to once and thousands of things I've listened to twice, and, you know, very, very few things that are more than that. But iTunes will also do the same thing if you program it to do that. And so I know what I've listened to the most this past year. And as some of you may have seen on social media, there are lots of people posting their Spotify top tens for 2019 because they can. It used to be the province of critics They were the only ones who could say what the best music of the year was. Now everybody who's on Spotify is getting their own personal top 10, and many people are horrified.
Well, I was going to say, this is another example of the internet both being, wow, they can tell me that, and oh, this is really creepy. That suddenly, you know, in front of your eyes is the list of your most listened to songs of the last year and the last decade, which Spotify recently released. And, oh my God, they know this?
Yeah. So, you know, a lot of people who think of themselves as a certain kind of sophisticated music listener, then they get their Spotify thing and there's Britney Spears at number one. And, you know, it's like, I don't want people knowing that, but lots of people do want you knowing that. So as I say, there's lots of social media going around of people saying, this is what I was listening to this year.
Another huge thing for this decade was video, and it's not like the music video hasn't had other huge moments in time, but the visual album became its own thing. Let's listen to two big ones, little examples from David Bowie and Beyonce.
With skull design upon my shoes, I can't give everything. I can't give everything. The
with the word big on the screen, or the word give. Really big on the screen in front of a kind of outer space moving stars set, I Can't Give Everything Away off of Bowie's final album, Black Star.
Yeah, now that, there are some epic videos that came from Bowie's final project. The reason I chose this one, which is a pretty simple video, it's just a lyric video, is that this was the final track on the final album. This was Bowie saying goodbye. And you got to remember, that album came out on his birthday. We had a weekend in which to try and parse what he was saying, you know, the skull designs upon my shoes and all these weird lyrics that were sprinkled through the record. And the title track had a video in which the body of the astronaut Major Tom is discovered on a far-off planet. And, you know, so we had a weekend, 2 days before the news came that he was dead. And then suddenly, all of those clues, all of those mysteries were made obvious. And here's Bowie saying, I can't give it all away. I mean, you have to figure some of this out for yourself. You know, I mean, he was known for having a kind of a impish sense of humor. And so this was at once an almost unbearably moving goodbye and a little bit of a tweak from Bowie at the same time.
And I guess megastars always pass in any year, in any decade. This decade saw Bowie, Prince, Aretha, Tom Petty,
Leonard Cohen. Bowie, Prince, and Leonard Cohen and George Michael all in the same year. 2016 was a bad year, and not for the reason you're thinking.
And here's a bit from that other music video that I mentioned, Beyonce's Formation.
I got hot sauce in my bag, swag. I see it, I want it, want it. I took yellow, want it, want it. I dream it, I work hard, I grind till I own it, own it. I twirl on the middle, albino alligators, get up. El Camino with the Cielo, sipping Cuervo and Ojita. I go off, I go off, I go hard, I go hard. Yeah, what's mine? Hey, what's mine? I'm a star, I'm a star. Cause I slay, I slay, I slay.
And even people who are not big music video watchers, but who just watched the Super Bowl that one particular year know this, right?
She slayed all the way to the Super Bowl that year. Now, here's the thing about Formation, about Lemonade, the video album that Beyonce dropped. In the industry, pulling a Beyonce is now an expression, and it means dropping an album that nobody had any idea was even in the works. So the sudden appearance of Lemonade was a kind of a sea change in the music industry, because up until then, the way you released an album was you talked about it, you promoted it, the industry got behind it, everybody, and you built up all this anticipation, and then finally the album came out. Here was Beyoncé just kind of like dropping this thing, totally unexpected, totally unanticipated, in our laps, and it wasn't just an album of songs, but every song had an accompanying video.
So this is an alternative way to market for sales, rather than building up expectations. Oh, the new video is coming December 21st. All of a sudden, there it is, and that generates a huge buzz?
Well, because everybody's doing the anticipation thing, and when everybody is going, when everybody is zigging, you want to zag, and that was exactly what Beyoncé did with Lemonade.
And it wasn't just big streaming services that defined this decade. The SoundCloud rap movement was also big. Here's a clip from Lucid Dreams by the late artist Juice WRLD. He just died this past Sunday at the age of 21.
I take prescriptions to make me feel okay. I know it's all in my head. I have these lucid dreams where I can't move a thing, thinking of you in my bed. You were my everything, thoughts of a
And I haven't seen that before. That's really good.
Well, I chose that particular clip because of the line, you know, I take prescription drugs to make me feel okay, to make me feel good. We don't yet have an autopsy result because he just died on Sunday, but it is known that he had problems with abusing prescription drugs, Percocet, for example. John Caramonica in the New York Times yesterday wrote a great article in which he sort of proclaimed the death of SoundCloud rap. I hope he's wrong. I suspect he hopes he's wrong too. But in which he said, you know, there are these mechanisms for plucking these young kids out of obscurity and making them stars, but there's no mechanism for supporting them, you know? And so you have 20 and 21-year-olds who have burst upon the scene and then they're gone. Lil Peep, dead at 21. XXXTentacion, dead at 20, murdered in his car. And Juice WRLD at 21. These were three of the leaders of so-called SoundCloud rap.
Now, and what does that term mean, SoundCloud rap?
So they all got their start by posting these really kind of simple skeletal songs on SoundCloud, on the website or the app SoundCloud. And then record companies and producers would find them and anoint them the next big thing. And there's a lot of SoundCloud rap that is very kind of angsty and aggressive and is genuinely rapped. But a lot of SoundCloud rap, as you just heard with Lucid Dreams, is actually sung. And it's sung in this kind of melancholy way. I mean, these guys were deeply influenced by emo rock and by 90s rock bands like Hole and Nirvana. So there's a lot of actual singing in SoundCloud rap and in Juice WRLD's music. So, you know, the term, I think, put a lot of people off. And it's a kind of music that if you give it a shot, you know, it really is. He wrote some really kind of beautiful stuff.
Now, we can't have a 2010s decade end list without playing a little Adele. Here's Adele's Rolling in the Deep. And that was an early decade hit, a kind of dinosaur, because it sold physical LPs, didn't it?
She is exactly that, a dinosaur. And so is Taylor Swift and a handful of top country stars who basically sell physical CDs and LPs. Yeah, people stream their stuff, But they top the charts by getting people to buy physical copies of their albums, which is otherwise, you know, almost unheard of in the industry. And, you know, Adele continues that model. And, you know, that song is an early decade hit. But, you know, my iTunes thing, if I added up all 10 years of the decade, might be pretty close to number one.
Huh. So why are they still selling CDs and LPs?
In Taylor Swift's case, it's because of her deep connection via social media to her followers. Country music has always gone its own way. It's long been a bastion of the music industry, of the way the industry was in the good old days. They still make and produce and sell, and that audience consumes music the way it's, you know, same as it ever was. Adele is just kind of an outlier, you know? She has that kind of classic orchestral pop sound that you heard in Burt Bacharach songs in the 60s or classic Motown. And so she appeals to an audience that skews a little older and grew up buying LPs or CDs. So those people still go out and buy them.
I want to take a phone call, somebody calling in on how the way we consume music might affect the kind of music we consume. And it's Gabriel in Manhattan on line 3. Gabriel, you're on WNYC. Hi there.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. What are you thinking?
Well, I'm thinking a couple things, actually. You guys touched on a lot in terms of how music has been consumed and pushed on us through various platforms. But what I wanted to talk about was how music actually gets made, the process of it, and how digital technology has affected the ways we look at it and consume it as well.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me that it gets made a lot faster than it used to, certainly back in the days of more analog approaches. You know, and that even speaks to music education in the schools, because a lot of people just don't know how to play instruments.
Yeah, really interesting, Gabriel.
Well, and it's an interesting point that Gabriel makes. It's not just how we consume music that's different; it's how it's made. We did a segment once on Soundcheck on the loudness wars. If you put an old LP, you know, through into a digital file and look at the waveform, you will see waveforms that go up and down, you know, the way you expect. Most contemporary pop music, and even some non-pop music, you look at that stuff on a computer screen and it's just a bar. It's just everything is so compressed so that it can, you know, fly out of the car speaker or fly out of your cheap, crappy computer speakers and still make itself heard. So the kind of compression of sound. So, and what I mean by that is the lows are not as low as they used to be. You don't have to strain to hear them. And the highs can be super high, but they're squelched down so that they all, you know, they will fit in your MP3 player or your computer speaker or whatever it is. So the way music is made is now different. And there are possibly psychoacoustic effects to that. You know, people like Neil Young has been on the warpath about digital music for years because he claims, and there are other people, T-Bone Burnett, another one, who claim with some scientific evidence that even though we can't hear what's happening above 20,000 cycles per second, we can feel it. And when we listen to music that no longer has that, because it's all been squelched down mm-hmm. into the middle, we're missing something, and that it is kind of literally disorienting.
Interesting. We're almost out of time. I want to sneak in these last two clips, clips that you pulled. And is the Mike Posner, as an example of a remix, an example of what you were just describing?
Well, no. Mike Posner, it is in the sense that it's digital music. So Mike Posner writes these, and you'll hear him sing, All I Know is Sad Songs. So he writes these sad, acoustic, melancholy little songs, and then producers swoop in and totally change the... I mean, basically, this song, I Took a Pill in Ibiza, if you know this song, you know it from the remix by the producer named Sieb, which became a global hit, and it has almost nothing to do with the original song except for Mike Posner's voice track.
Ooh, I know a sad soul, sad soul, darling. Ooh, I know a sad soul, sad soul.
Another one that was everywhere. We're just Absolutely, about at time. Yeah. Let me get the last one in that I know you wanted to include because it's an example of what's going on in something very different, the London jazz scene. And this is In the Castle of My Skin from Sons of Kemet.
Sons of Kemet.
Here we go. John, what is that representative of?
So the London jazz scene is a very diverse, very inclusive scene of young musicians. Many of them are from Caribbean backgrounds, and they draw on electronic music, hip-hop, punk rock, Caribbean music. And, you know, it's one of the most interesting and active music scenes, I think, anywhere in the world.
What's coming in the 2020s? Do you make predictions?
God, I have enough trouble keeping up with what's out there now, let alone trying to determine what's coming down the pike next.
Please thank John Schaefer, the host of WNYC's New Sounds and Soundcheck.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Keep on.